Yeah, if you didn't get the vaccine, you shouldn't get treatment. That's not who we are.
Sean Hannity.
Maybe when they're getting treatment, you offer them help.
Today at 3:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Thursday. Yeah, actually, my wife is probably smiling with delight right now. That's her perception of Joe Biden's theme song, If I Only Had a Brain. You can read the lyrics of that one to go along with it. It matches kind of nice. Anyway, hope you're having a decent Friday Eve. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strecker in there cracking me up and, again, probably putting a smile on my wife's face, assuming she's awake. Coming up at the 55 KRC Morning Show again, thanks to Joe Strecker for lining stuff up, Congressman Warren Davidson. We've got a lot to talk about with the congressman during the couple of segments we've got. We will talk debt ceiling, and the Republicans are basically saying no. Hey, Democrats, you're in control. You raise the debt ceiling. Do it through budget reconciliation. We're not going to help. Interesting position. NDA, National Defense Authorization Act. Last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of callers talk about discharge being discharged from the military, being discharged from the military for refusal to take the vaccine, and whether it's dishonorable, honorable, or something other than or in between. And apparently, it could be pretty much anything. There is a proposal in the National Defense Authorization Act that bans dishonorable discharge for COVID-19 vaccine refusal, and of course, the Biden administration is against it, and in fact strongly opposes the provision. The provision specifically blocking the Pentagon from dishonorably discharging a service member who refuses to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Why would you want to dishonorably discharge someone because of their maybe a religious-based refusal? I don't get that, and I'm not quite sure whether it's constitutional, although I appreciate the fact that when you're in the military, you don't enjoy the freedoms that those that are not serving enjoy out here in the crazy world in which we live. But interested in getting the take on that from Congressman Warren Davidson. I have a feeling I know which side of the ledger he's on that one. We'll also talk about infrastructure and budget reconciliation. Of course, the far left of the Democrat Party is saying, listen, we're not voting on that infrastructure bill unless you advance the $3.5 trillion socialist takeover of the United States of America. And so there's a lot of infighting going on among the Democrats right now, putting at risk their legislation, including the police reform legislation they were hoping to get through. That started right after George Floyd's death. The George Floyd Justice Policing Act, which was passed in March, just now fell apart in the Senate completely. They couldn't find any common ground, so that one's gone by the wayside. Just a little parenthetical on that. Anyhow, reflecting infighting, Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague, he is opposed to overreach by the administration. We're talking about the proposal. It's a Biden administration proposal that would require financial institutions to turn over private citizens' personal bank account information to the IRS if they exceed $600 of inflows or outflows in an account. And the way I understand that is if you go to your bank and you take out $600 or more dollars, they're going to report that to the IRS. Why? Why? I'm looking forward to asking him that very question. What the hell right do they have to know whether or not I pull $600 out of my account or not? And in fact, it's something I do almost every single week. I like to pay in cash for most things. I try to avoid the credit card. Variety of reasons. First off, I've said it before. Screw those guys. You know, I've got this, you know, basically collectively, metaphorically raised middle finger attitude toward data collectors. It's not that I'm doing anything untoward or illegal, at least in terms of my morality and judgment system. I'm certainly not breaking any laws that are on the statutes or in books of this country. But, you know, you've got no right to know what it is that I'm spending money on. And I find cash a great mechanism to use to prevent that information from being kept. I do use credit cards. I mean, I do shop online, so I recognize that. I know Amazon has created its own little dossier about my purchases over the years. Stuck with that. Nothing I can do about it except, of course, not use Amazon. But why should the IRS have anything to do with your bank transactions if they're that small? They've been tracking large withdrawals for years, and I don't necessarily find that appropriate either. I think it's allegedly, or at least lip service was always paid that they do it to track drug traffickers and criminals, but... I just find it absolutely offensive. They don't have probable cause to believe that there's a crime being committed. This is like the NSA surveillance. This is like the FBI. You know, if there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed, then you can go ahead and gather evidence about some person or entity that you have probable cause, a reasonable, articulable suspicion that criminal activity is going on. Just because you withdraw $600 doesn't mean jack squat. You couldn't get an indictment on that? Oh, my God, he took out $600. Yeah, you know what? And I immediately went over and paid $250 to the cash register lady at Kroger from that $600 I pulled out to buy the week's worth of groceries. And I bought a sandwich at a restaurant. And I stopped over at the convenience store and got a can of Monster tea and lemonade. You know, all these little purchases throughout the week that I just don't put on a credit card transaction. Why? Because. That'd be a good conversation with the Ohio Treasurer, Robert Sprague. You find that one at 7:30. Brad Ricca with the book True Raiders, The Untold Story of the 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. And at 8:50, Fred Summey, it's NKRTL's 48th annual Celebration for Life. That'd be Northern Kentucky Right to Life. So we'll hear about the details on that from Fred at 8:50. In the meantime, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Let's see what Nick's got this morning. Hey, Nick, happy Thursday to you. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Counselor.
How you doing today? Hey,
the UCMG is very, very different from civilian code that you were taught. My dad went in with a greetings letter. The soldiers that went in later were always given, especially if you were going overseas, you got a set of shots like you can't believe.
Oh, this article says it's one of the COVID shot, I think they said is one of, I think it was 12 that are required for military service. I find that figure
yeah,
here.
But here's the difference, and this is where Mike Allen might be the best person to ask, because I don't know the code exactly, but I was taught part of it. If you were a Marine, okay, basic training is the most expensive class ever taught in the world, period. It's copied by everybody. It's the most developed. In the basic concept of basic training is you are no longer an individual. You are a part of a unit, and you will support this unit, and you are now a robot.
Understood.
See the difference? Okay, that's a basic concept. Now, you were given orders, but if you turn around and you were given an order, shoot that woman with baby in head, you could turn around and tell the boss over the top of you, stick it in your ear, I ain't doing it. That's one of the very, very few times as an example of an unlawful order. If you're being told that you have to take a vaccine that is unproven, that part has not been challenged or questioned in court, especially at a UCMJ level. You see the difference of where
yeah,
I'm coming
and, from? Yeah, and I was just going to qualify that, because that court challenge would be a military tribunal challenge, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. But you've also still got the civilian challenges. Because they
True.
Don't have any long-term stuff. The daggone vaccines that they were giving out, like if you were going to the Persian Gulf back in the old days, you were getting vaccines for stuff that We just don't get here in the United States.
I understand.
You know what I mean? There's no reason for it. But at the same time, there is a legitimate need. Hey, you're in close quarters. You don't want to get somebody else sick with something that we're not used to.
Understood.
So that's a legitimate part of the military. But there's a real dichotomy here that's not getting understood, and it will not be understood, especially by a civilian journalism people that are reporting all this crap.
I get where you're coming from.
That's where I'm coming from.
I get it like a grown-up.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand like a grown-up, as my dad likes to say. I truly understand where you're coming from. And again, I mean, the civilian population is different from those who enlist. I agree, and he summed it up perfectly. You give up your autonomy in favor of the collective, the group, the support. No man left behind kind of attitude. I get it. And I understand the circumstances are different. So what is your conclusion, Nick, as to this NDAA provision, which would not allow the military to dishonorably discharge? You could still be discharged for not taking this vaccine. But how they characterize it, honorable, dishonorable, or something less than? I mean, what's your take on that, Nick?
As I said, you're going to need to talk to a JAG officer, and I don't even have a JD like you do. So I'm smart enough to know where I'm ignorant.
That's okay. This is one of those, opinions are like kind of things, Nick, on some level, because everybody's got one, and there's been no definitive ruling on the propriety of this. So since we are not in uniform, Nick, we'll just let that one sit.
As I said, you got to talk to a JAG officer. You have people on Jeep Channel that you can find that are qualified in that kind of a capacity. But the point is, there is a precedent already in terms of being told you will take this vaccine whether you like it or not.
Absolutely.
But those were vaccines that were already approved, had history, and were fine. This one is a deal where, did you test me to see if I already had the antibodies?
Right.
Because my health is in good shape, and if I take this, it's going to screw me up.
That is certainly a possibility.
Do I have an immune responsibility problem based on a family history genetically that would affect this? So this is a whole new world in terms of litigation. But if you're the poor bastard that's getting the daggone paycheck and you got a wife and kids relying on it,
well,
You got a whole different world.
And Nick, now you're entering into the world of civilian life as well, because companies over 100, if Biden gets his way, are going to be facing the same problem. Nick, got to run. Well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, that was a good call. You made some excellent points. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Quick word for Odor Exit. Odor Exit will get rid of the stench that you're dealing with. And it's 5:21 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones, and on the web at 55KRC.com. You can stream the audio if you're out of town and you still want to listen to the program. Of course, stream it over the internet. It's easy to do. Get a copy of Tisha Powell's book, Liberal Lies. Interesting conversation with her. Talked to Sharon Coolidge yesterday about the David Mann AFTAB pure evil debate. David Mann wins. Judge Napolitano on voluntary servitude. Those are the most recent podcasts there at 55KRC.com. Also, the information for the Steady Strides 5K for the Parkinson's. I'll be there for that one. That's October 2nd, and apparently early in the morning. I was talking to – guess who I got a call from after the show, Joe? Yeah, Bob. Bob Wetterer, he's responsible. Good guy, real charitable guy. He reminded me what time I had to be there for my MC events. It's Saturday morning. I got to be there at 7:15. Not my normal state of being on a Saturday. Normally I'm sleeping. Anyhow, on to something we really need to worry about. It's like time to do the alarm. I have a whole stack of developments in connection with COVID-19. Apparently there's a big surge going on. They're worried about a twindemic with the flu season kicking in. We've got a brand new variant that they located in Kentucky that originated in Japan. Apparently more contagious. And there's a ripple effect from COVID-19, and now it's time to worry. Several states across the United States are experiencing liquor shortages. This related to COVID-19 and not clear when the supply chain is going to be able to meet demand. You may have experienced an inability to find booze early on in the pandemic, but they were really able to kind of come out the other side on that. But now we have continued report of shortages from Vermont to New Jersey to Ohio. Three states specifically mentioned in the article. Ohio is there. And Kentucky, you play a role in this too. Buffalo Trace, I believe, is not Buffalo Trace a distillery in Kentucky since they make bourbon that apparently everybody wants? Yeah, that's in short supply too. Anyway, they're starting to ration. States that have total control over liquor control, like Pennsylvania, are rationing the number of bottles that you can buy. That's a report of the Pennsylvania State Board in charge of consumer liquor announced just last week that it was limiting customers to 2 bottles of certain alcoholic beverages per day. Specifically, the list includes Hennessy Cognac, Buffalo Trace Bourbon, and Patron Tequila. And those 2-bottle purchase limits will be in place for the foreseeable future, according to the board. Liquor store customers in North Carolina, they have out-of-stock signs all over the place for a lot of their favorite booze amid an ongoing supply shortage. According to David Osgo, who's chief economist for Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, he said there are problems at nearly every step of the alcohol beverage supply chain. Producers struggling to source glass bottles. Importation costs from overseas. Those have gone through the roof. There have been article after article about how expensive container ships have gotten since the pre-pandemic levels. Crazy expensive. So that's obviously going to be reflected in any booze you get shipped from overseas. Delivering booze, whether it's to bars, restaurants, or liquor stores, slowed down because of shortage of truck drivers, which has been a ripple effect across all sectors that rely on trucking. Osgo, the guy from the Liquor Commission, pointed out that some of these problems existed before the pandemic, but now it's just gotten a lot much worse because of the foregoing ones that I mentioned. Another big problem, and this one is an obvious one, is because you got to age liquor, a lot of it anyway. And they mentioned tequila, for example. How many cactus plants are you going to plant, agave plants, do you going to plant to meet demand in, 2026? Right, you don't know, neither do they. Will people still be drinking tequila in 2026? Will the amount of tequila demanded increase between now and then? Will it remain static? They can't plan for that, or they have to plan for that far in advance. And so if you want a whole lot of tequila, and apparently a lot of people are boozing it up because of COVID-19, the lockdowns, the stress, the anxiety, the just simple fact that you're sitting at home in quarantine, yeah. So that would explain why, for example, Buffalo Trace, and you got to age that bourbon, is in short supply and being rationed. Actually, though, there's positive news for bourbon drinkers out there who like Buffalo Trace. They're undertaking, apparently, a $1.2 billion expansion, but it's going to be a few years before they can fully meet consumer demand. So I guess you'll still be paying $3,000 or whatever for that Buffalo Trace rare version. Anyway, now it's time to get really worried. 526 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. I got local stories coming up. I first want to mention. Coming up on 5:32. Time for some local stories. It's going to bum out a lot of people. Going to make a lot of people happy, but it certainly will ensure the steady supply of energy. Ohio Supreme Court has approved the construction of Duke Energy's so-called controversial Central Corridor Pipeline. Pipeline about 14 miles through Sharonville, Sycamore Township, Blue Ash, Evenell, Redding, Amberley Village, and Gulf Manor. Duke says the new pipeline is necessary to replace aging infrastructure, reduce the reliance on gas from stations south of the region, allow Duke to retire peaking plants that supply gas in cold winter. Of course, a lot of residents have been opposing the project. It's been in litigation for a while. Critics said the risks outweigh the pipeline's potential benefits. For example, the pipeline, they say, will only reduce reliance on one southern station by 5%. Reading, Blue Ash, and the neighbors opposed to Pipeline Extension, which is an organization. Initial cap on that. Appealed to Ohio Power Sitting Board decision granting Duke's certificate to construct the pipeline. They argued the board misspelled the statutory, or misapplied, rather, misspelled, technical violation, misapplied the statutory criteria governing the certificate approval. Decided the case on incomplete information, misweighed the evidence, and limited their ability to meaningfully participate. The court ruled that while the board failed to follow its own rule by allowing Duke to submit a proposed route without also providing a fully developed alternative route, those appealing the decision couldn't prove they were harmed by that error. It's going through. Federal judge expected a rule by the end of the week on whether whether to stop the St. Elizabeth Healthcare System from requiring its employees to be vaccinated against COVID. U.S. District Judge David Bunning heard arguments yesterday from both sides. Hospital groups, 10,000 or more employees being required to be vaccinated by October 1st or obtain a medical or religious exemption. As part of the lawsuit filed earlier in the month on behalf of dozens of the hospital group's employees, the plaintiffs asked the judge to put a temporary injunction on the vaccine requirement. Plaintiffs' attorneys have alleged the hospital group implemented a corrupt, that's in quotes, process for vaccine exemption requests and denied them carte blanche. Yesterday's hearing, St. E's attorney said more than 450 exemptions for religious or medical reasons reasons have been approved, hundreds more either deferred or are still pending. They claim only 70 have been denied. So we will see. Cincinnati police investigating the deaths of two people whose bodies were found in North Fairmont. That's on yesterday afternoon, discovered in a brown van, 1600 block of Pulte Street, according to the Enquirer, according to Fox 19, rather. As reported in the Enquirer, they gave credit to Fox 19. Officials said Cincinnati Police Department's homicide unit responded to the scene. Investigation ongoing. No further details released at this time. I'm imagining if you have information, 352-3040, call Crime Stoppers and let them know what you have. 535 right now at 55 Care CD Talk Station. I'm going to do Stack of Stupid coming up. .539 coming up at 540, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Happy Friday Eve to you. Very much looking forward to Congressman Warren Davidson coming to the 55 Care CD Morning Show, beginning at 7:05 for a couple of segments. Robert Sprague, Ohio Treasurer, at 7:30, opposing a Biden administration overreach on finance. Someone got me a little irked this morning, but maybe Robert Sprague can shore things up for us and fight the good fight on behalf of our own financial privacy. So hang around for those. More guests as well. And phone calls are always welcome at 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. #550 on AT&T phones. Let's see here. Now we got a three strikes law. I didn't know these things were still on the books. Pennsylvania man in jail after being accused of, are you ready, underpaying for a bottle of Mountain Dew. This will serve as an illustration why three strikes lawsuits may, or three strike laws may be a stupid idea. Joseph Sobolewski showed up at a convenience store, East Central Pennsylvania, store head of promotion, where two 20-ounce Mountain Dew bottles cost $3. Bought one, put $2 on the counter, or the store of the counter, or the counter store, and left. Right? Two for $3. He took one and gave them $2. Single bottle, though, the retail price in the store is $2.29 plus tax. So he really didn't overpay, as he probably assumed he was covering the due and the tax associated with it and probably leaving a little bit extra. Police and store workers said he underpaid by 29 cents plus tax for a total of 43 cents. This is actually a case. Store employees called police. They found him, charged him with a felony. He was sent to jail on a $50,000 cash-only bond. Facing up to 7 years in prison. Bond was changed 7 days later to $50,000 unsecured bond. State law says an unsecured bond is granted when a defendant signs an agreement to be liable for a fixed sum of money if he or she fails to show up in court or comply with the conditions of the bail bond. So no money or other form of security is actually deposited. Why? Well, he's been charged under the state's three strikes law for retail theft. He was convicted more than a decade ago for pumping gas without paying. One, He was arrested and sentenced for stealing shoes from a Kmart. Shoes total cost $39.99. Now, if he'd have just stolen this in California, Joe, they would have just let him have them, right? He ended up paying $866 in fines and fees, sentenced to 3 months in jail for a probation violation, I guess, on the pumping gas without paying charge. That was two. He and his wife arrested for putting craft supplies into the backup in their backpack at Hobby Lobby. Bond in that case, $2,000, and he's applying for a state-run diversion program, underpaying for the soda, his fourth charge. And of course, many object to three strikes laws because they don't take into account the nature of the crime, the context of the crime, or really the gravity of the crime. There's an increased penalty if someone commits retail theft repeatedly. Pennsylvania law says first charge, if the item's stolen less than $150, it's a summary offense. Second, bumped up to a misdemeanor. Third, no matter the value of the item taken, it is considered a third-degree felony. Other third-degree felonies in the state include, are you ready, involuntary manslaughter. Somehow, justice just doesn't seem to be served with that.
What the hell?
Here's something you don't see in a headline every day, thankfully. Man with mullet is included in the headline. We go to Land O'Lakes, Florida, where investigators are looking for a man with a mullet and a minivan related to a series of burglaries in Central Florida. Pasco County Sheriff's Office said some burglar broke into a barn and a home along State Route 54 on two separate occasions over the past 2 months. They shared a video of the first crime, which showed the burglar leaving the area in a dark-colored minivan. And the second break-in, they say the man drove off in a black Ford pickup truck and trailer. In addition to the mullet, sheriff's officer said the man had a tattoo on the left side of his chest. Pasco County Sheriff would like to hear from you if you have any more information. Oh, you're looking for greater specificity? Joe, are you suggesting for a moment that if a man finds out that he is wanted by police and the only description they give is that he has a mullet, that he may go out and get a haircut? Oh, I know there's a lot of mullets in Florida. It would be nice to know what the tattoo looks like, though, right? Maybe his height, his weight, license plate in the minivan. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of factors. You know, what kind of clothes he was wearing in the last time he was seen. The color, well, it doesn't say he was carrying a weapon, so the color of his weapon seems immaterial in this one. If it's armed robbery, then we darn well better know what color the gun is. 545 right now, 55. Five. 50. Just waiting for it to click. Give you an accurate time. 55 KRCD Talk Station. Go back to the Stack of Stupid, and we'll head over to Florida, which we quite often do in the Stack of Stupid. Man walked into a car dealership, and he wanted to trade the car he pulled up in for a new one. This is a normal thing. It happens all the time. According to First Coast News and some other Florida outlets, police in Jacksonville, Florida, responded to Lake City Chrysler Dodge Jeep, where that's exactly what happened. Guy comes in a car, wanted to trade it in on a new one. Slightly different scenario in this one, which is why it's in the Stack of Stupid. Dealership sales staff logged the VIN on the trade-in, and they determined that the car had been stolen from... Yes, their dealership, Lake City Chrysler Dodge Jeep.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
It happened only a few days prior. He tried to trade in this car he stole from the same dealership. Police say that after they read him his rights, they told him that he did indeed steal the car. Also, the dealership's security camera, it showed the theft. 50-year-old Lake City man also said he was homeless. He's been jailed and charged with grand theft auto, dealing in stolen property, criminal mischief, and petty theft. And, well, a master's degree in epic stupidity, I suppose.
As is tradition.
Irate McDonald's customer stabbed. We already know this trip was completely unnecessary. Irate McDonald's customer and a stabbing. Go ahead. What could possibly justify this? sugar.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
57-year-old victim eating at the McDonald's when the suspect complained to a security guard that his coffee was too sweet. When the diner came to the defense of the security guard, a brawl erupted between the two customers and spilled outside of the street, where the suspect pulled out a knife and stabbed the victim in the chest. Stabber, described as a bearded man with glasses carrying several tote bags, ran off and was still being sought earlier this week. Police released a surveillance image of the man, hoping that someone might recognize him.
Just walk away.
You know, I mean, there's so many layers of dumb in this one. But let's face it, the whole thing got kicked off because that guy was pissed off. He had too much sugar, and he took his complaint to his security guard. All right. Oh, we have another vaccination story here. A suburban Chicago woman has been arrested. She was arrested in Hawaii last week after court records show that she entered the state using a fake COVID-19 vaccination card. Chloe Morozak, 24 years old, arrested end of August at Niue International Airport, facing a misdemeanor charge of falsification of vaccination documents. Arrest first reported Hawaii News. They believe she submitted the false card to avoid the state's 10-day mandatory quarantine that was put in place after Hawaii's governor issued their emergency proclamation. Her card indicated that she was vaccinated in Delaware by the National Guard. Investigators contacted Delaware's immunization program, learned that the state did not use its National Guard to administer vaccination shots. State also said there was no record of a vaccination under her name and date of birth. She also happened to have misspelled Moderna on the vaccination card. She spelled it Moderna, M-A-D-E-R-N-A, as opposed to M-O-D-E-R-N-A. Investigators arrested her at the airport on her departure date. She told them that she paid for a vaccination card at her doctor's office, according to court records. Her bail set at $2,000. Paid for the vaccination at her doctor's office, or the card anyway, suggesting that she was given the card without actually getting the vaccination. Maybe get one more in, I think. We go to Bay City, Michigan, where a Whitmore man's been federally charged with leaving more than one pipe bombs, plural, at cell phone stores, as well as threatening letters at cell towers. Allegedly, the man carried out the acts as part of a moral campaign to end pornography and cursing.
What?
Okay, apparently a $5 million payday comes into play here. Anyway, law enforcement... just this Tuesday, arrested 75-year-old John Allen. Later that day, Allen had his initial appearance in U.S. District Court, Eastern District of Michigan, charged with extortion and attempted damage or destruction of a building used in interstate commerce. First charge, 20-year felony, latter punishable by a minimum of 5 years and not more than 20 years. He faced the same two charges in Western District of Michigan, though he's not yet had his initial appearance there. Case against him began when a Charter Spectrum employee found a letter inside a polka dot envelope near a telecommunication tower. Letter contained a threat of extortion demanding AT&T and Verizon and other carriers. Turned the letter over to Michigan State Police. More threatening letters found in similar polka dot envelopes at towers around town. Similar zip tie found in a fence surrounding a cell tower in Rexton. No letter in that one. Letters each indicated they were from a Coalition for Moral Telecommunication addressed to AT&T, Verizon, and other carriers. CMT, Coalition for Moral Telecommunication, claimed to be almost 30 strong. 30 members, and prepared to travel throughout the country and begin destroying inner-city tower communications unless demands were met. Affidavit states all telecommunications containing immoral content must be stopped. Defined immoral content in the letter as that which includes, quote, cursing, pornography, and all manner of indecent communication. Well, if they gave in to that, I mean, hell, about two-thirds of the internet would shut down, wouldn't it, Joe? 556, 55 KRC, the talk station. Don't go away. Plenty more coming up. I hope you can stick around.
When they say it,
cannot require someone to be vaccinated.
You'll hear about it.
Pandemic politics are making people sick.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
6:05, coming up on 6:06, 55 KRC, the talk station. Friday Eve, and a good one. It's always good when folks call. So if you'd like to call and talk about something going on in the world, COVID, the border crisis, the prop Democrats are having amongst themselves, trying to shove $3.5 trillion in bills, well, actually more like five, in bills down our throat. They do not have a whole lot of agreement going on there. The increase in murders, biggest jump in murders since they began record-keeping. Something seemed wrong with what's going on in this world. Biden's approval rating now at a brand new low. According to a new Gallup poll, he's down to 43% approval, tanking amid, well, all of the various crises of his own making. The border, Afghanistan withdrawal, bombing innocent people who you claim are terrorists. We could go on. $3.5 trillion in spending. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Of course, we could talk about COVID because we got some, the twindemic that's upon us now with flu season arriving. They're concerned about COVID and the flu, recommending folks go out and get their flu shot. I saw an interesting comment on the internet just, you know, this morning. When you get your flu shot, do you get freaked out when other people don't get their flu shot? Just asking for a friend. New COVID variant was found in Kentucky. Apparently, deadly mutation that could evade virus antibodies. So, lots going on in the world. I just want to turn to the theater of the absurd since we just got done with Stack of Stupid. Maxine Waters could have had her story right there on the top. Let us review. What the hell is going on at the border? Does anybody know? Is the Biden administration doing anything to stop the unbelievable crisis-like influx of illegal immigrants coming into our country? The answer, of course, no. Look what's going on. Kamala Harris, has she ever even paid any attention to a job that she was assigned to do? Her approval rating, parenthetically, in that same Gallup poll is higher than Biden's. How anybody could ultimately approve the work of Kamala Harris since she really hasn't done jack squat since being elected Vice President of the United States of America? Anyway, she's coming in at 49%, which is equal to her disapproval rating. But she's in charge of the border and hasn't done anything. I mean, it's just gross incompetence. I mean, being in charge of the border could include her coming out and literally saying, no, we know what's going on. This is exactly what we want. This is the administration's policy. Except they stand in front of everyone and say, the borders are closed. The borders are closed. And then proceed to move a whole lot of people standing on the border and waiting to be picked up and fly them into the interior of our country or put them on a bus into the interior of our country. You know, here's a new strategy. Jay Ratliff has got to love this one. Our aviation expert, he's not on today because he's on vacation. There was a report of migrants biting Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials while on their deportation flight. Now, here's how this scam works. You hear the Biden administration, we're going to fly them back to Haiti. Well, no, you're not. Monday, flight set to leave Laughlin Air Force Base in Del Rio. 8 a.m. flight, going to Haiti. What do they do when passengers become unruly while the plane is still on the ground? They return to the gate, don't they? That's exactly what happened. Happened disturbance on the plane. Two of the passengers got out of their seats and attacked ICE officials and removal operations officers. They realized they were heading back to Haiti and lost it, said one senior federal law enforcement officer familiar with the incident. Migrants who are on deportation flights are not restrained, except for some rare instances, apparently, when they have convicted criminals on the same plane as the civilians. But because they are not restrained, anybody on board, of course, can technically get up and move around the cabin. Now, I'm not advocating for restraining folks or being flown out of the country, but what do you when you are being sent back to a place that took you forever to flee. I have an article here about the unbelievable route these Haitians have gone on in order to make it to the Del Rio Bridge or wherever other point of crossing they end up. It's unbelievable. It's horrific. I would not put my worst enemy through it. But the reason they're doing it is because the Biden administration dropped all the Trump policies and are allowing people to enter into the country. I heard a news reporter talking about it. He said, you know, before this all happened, before Joe opened his mouth, you know, you maybe see 500, 600 people being processed a day. He said, and as soon as Biden, you know, announced this, whatever he had said, he said all of the Haitians under the bridge got in touch with their relatives. He said it went from 1,000 people to 10,000 in a matter of about a week. And, of course, we know it ballooned up to excess of 15,000 people. They do have telephones. They do have ability to communicate. Anyhow, back to the planes. They, according to the senior law enforcement official, they realized that they were heading back, so they got unruly. U.S. government forced to cancel that flight. And we also canceled a second deportation flight on Haiti at 5 a.m. because Haitian migrants on board were being disruptive and not complying while the plane was on the tarmac. So if you want to stay in the United States and you're being placed on an airplane and you're free to move about the cabin, even though they tell you you're not free to move about the cabin, if you move about the cabin and, oh, I don't know, assault one of the flight attendants, then you get to stay. Now, I'm not saying these guys won't be prosecuted, but an entire plane full of people who was being taken back to their home country didn't. They're still here. Now, back over to Maxine Waters. I got off a little cul-de-sac on that one. That's just, you know, I mean, word's going to get around on that one, much in the same way it's gotten around that if you make it to our border, you're going to make it in. Representative Maxine Waters, upset at her own president. She critical of the Biden administration and its handling of the crisis at the southern border. Maxine Waters. Where does her criticism come from? Yeah, the viral footage of the Border Patrol agents on horseback and they're aggressively repelling migrants back across the Rio Grande. Now, there was a period of time there for a day or two when all the media outlets were talking about how they were using whips and whipping people and beating them and using expletives and calling people racist names. And, oh, my God, this is not America. Chuckie Schumer actually came out and said something to that effect. Well, the news reports were wrong. They weren't using whips. They were reining their horses in. Maneuvering the horse with the reins. That's how you steer a horse. Anyway, Waters taking a shot at the Biden administration for, in her words, following the Trump policy. And it goes downhill from there. Quote, we are following the Trump policy. He is the one that does not follow the Constitution and would not allow those seeking refuge to be able to petition to get into the country. What the hell are we doing here? What we witness, and she's again referring to the horseback, what we witnessed takes us back hundreds of years. What we witnessed was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. Pause for a moment and reflect that Maxine Waters, black representative from California, said that the horseback riding ICE officials who were merely endeavoring to support and defend America's borders, following the law, preventing a surge of refugees, not whipping anyone, just crowd control, as you'd see at any, oh, I don't know, busy Chicago street in the middle of summer, maybe after a Cubs game victory or something like that. What we witnessed was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. She actually said that. And went on, cowboys with their reins, again, whipping black people, Haitians, into the water where they're scrambling and falling down. And they're all they're trying to do is escape from violence in their country. That's an interesting take. I thought maybe lynching and Jim Crow and actually, the whole concept of slavery ownership of a human being with no rights other than what you say goes? Doesn't that seem a tad bit worse than ICE agents on horseback trying to enforce American law? I'm just throwing it out there because, I mean, that's the only conclusion I can reach, that Maxine Waters is bad crap and crazy and doing no service to her country or no service to the legacy of history of slavery that we should learn from and the evils that were brought about as a consequence of slavery, like lynchings and ownership of human beings and forcing people to engage in labor without paying them. No, that horseback, that's worse than slavery, what we're witnessing here. Yes. Go ahead. 616 55 KRCD Talk Station. A word for. At 621, happy Thursday. Looking forward to Congressman Warren Davidson coming up after top of the hour news. Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague opposing the Biden administration's effort to snoop into your personal bank account information and report it to the IRS. Man, that thing is crazy. The book True Raiders, The Untold Story of the 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. Brad Rika, author of that book, joins us at 8:05 to talk about it. And Fred Summey with the annual Celebration for Life, Northern Kentucky Right to Life, doing their annual celebration, 48th annual. That at 8:50. We'll get the details at that point. Real quick here before I jump to the phone, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. On this border thing, and, you know, again, Maxine Waters is a bit overstating the case there, Mexican President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, that's a mouthful, he's getting a little upset, demanding the United States now start taking urgent action to deal with the migrant crisis. Why? Well, if you look at the Del Rio Bridge and every other point of entry, there are tens of thousands of migrants standing there. Whose country did they walk through to get there? And whose country are they stuck in waiting? Yes. And his basic message, as I construe it, is pay us. So they're stranded not only in the southern border cities along in Mexico or in the border towns in the United States. Obrador said yesterday, enough talking. It's time to act. Mexico and Central American countries were waiting for, are you ready, several billion dollars Washington had pledged, this for economic development to reduce the need for migrants to flee poverty. He said there was a commitment that they were going to invest $4 billion. $2 billion for Central America and $2 billion for Mexico. Nothing has come. Nothing. He did say, though, or suggest that Biden is interested, quote unquote, is interested in solving the problem, and said he was hopeful that it would be a regional agreement on economic development. I think there will be results. So it's a shakedown, is it? Once his billions of dollars, we'll get the problem solved with that, won't we? Hey, Pat, welcome to the show. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday to you, Brian. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind today, Pat?
Well, a couple of things. Were you able to go through Cervantes at all?
I could not make it. No, I had way too much on my plate yesterday. Plus, my wife had made baked goods plus a blueberry pie for my birthday, so I thought it was unnecessary at this point in time in my dietary life.
Okay, well, when you get a chance, go by there. They're looking for you. Something's waiting for you.
Okay, all right, I will do that.
And then come back and let me know.
Right.
Okay, well, anyway, you were talking about the border situation, and, Brian, I want to shed a little different light on what's going on. Remember back when Biden and Sarah Palin had that debate. Do you remember that?
During
the Obama administration?
I can't say I do remember the specifics of any given debate that they may have had.
Okay.
So no.
Well, just go back and look at it. I saw her on a show, and I can't remember what show it was. Maybe one of your listeners can weigh in.
All right.
But during that debate, she basically was calling him out on his foreign policy and things like that. So I don't see why people are surprised by what's going on with him.
I don't know. I don't think anybody's necessarily surprised that he has this open borders mentality. That's what the Democrat Party is pretty much all about. It's just, it's the American people witnessing these just stark contrast at the border because of his open borders policies. People's eyes are open. They're like, oh, wait a second. Under Trump, he had all these things in place. Stay in Mexico. Don't come here. The word got around. The number of people endeavoring to make it to the Mexican border decreased dramatically. You could actually witness the stark contrast. And it became full-on display. It's like the disaster in Afghanistan. It was like somebody flipped on a light switch. Biden shows up in office, gets rid of all the Donald Trump mandates and edicts and executive orders, basically telling the world that the border is open without using those words. Words get around. Coyotes make tons of money bringing people there. Biden just got rid of Trump's prohibitions on people coming to the country. Time to show up. And boom, it was like an explosion went off. And so that's why we have more than a million people engaging in, or at least picked up by border crossing guards just this calendar year alone or fiscal year alone. So, yeah. Everybody knows what Joe Biden says and what the party stands for, but seeing it happen is truly eye-opening. Couple that with the constant din of criticism against the Trump administration for these camps they were locked up in and locking up children in cages. And well, you get 10 times that, 10 times worse under the Biden administration and its open borders policy. So, yeah, it's reality on display, what they said in practicality, in real life going on. And it's a blanket disaster. Thanks, Pat. Got to run. I'll try to remember to get over there. I really will. 627 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Holly, you be first. You don't mind holding. Sean Hannity morning update coming up after I mentioned Your Wellness Center, who's happy to give men a free blood test to check their testosterone levels, because if you're starting to feel run down as you get older, weight gain is a real issue. I mean, we jokingly refer to the COVID-19, the 19 pounds that people gain. But, you know, as you get older, it's difficult. .632, happy Thursday. Brian Thomas right here. Phone number 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. We're going to get to local stories. Going to go over to the phones. I promised Holly she'd be first, and she is. Holly, thank you so much for holding. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Oh, happy to. What's on your mind today?
I want to ask a question in regards to all these mandates for the vaccine.
Uh-huh.
And everybody that keeps popping up, you know, saying we now mandate the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Biden come out and say that the federal government was going to withhold money to all these municipalities and anybody that got federal money if they didn't institute these mandates?
Isn't
that blackmail?
Well, it is. Blackmail.
Trump was impeached for.
This is what the federal government does all the time. It doesn't have the power to make us do anything. My favorite illustration of this is back when Ohio refused to change its drinking age under pressure from the federal highway or federal government because they wanted 19-year-olds to be able to go out and buy beer. That was the way it was. And no, we're not going to change it to 21. Well, the federal government said, listen, all right, fine. If you don't change your drinking age at 21, then we're not going to give you highway funds. Guess who capitulated? That's why we have a 21-year drinking age in the state of Ohio. So they can do that. That's the kind of thing they do all the time. It's call it blackmail, call it extortion. I just look at it as fundamentally wrong, unfair, and I wish it was unlawful. And I suppose there may be certain restrictions on the extent to which they can go to do that. But this is Eric Holder and his Justice Department did the same thing with payday lending companies. They hated them. They hate firearm manufacturers. So they threatened banks with compliance audits. If you don't stop doing business, lawful business, mind you, with these particular companies, we are going to come and rifle through your books. And no bank, no hospital system, no business subject to the level of regulations that those industries have would ever want to go through a compliance audit. So it's easier to capitulate and comply, much in the same way it is, I guess. It was easier for the state of Ohio to capitulate and comply with the federal government's demands because, well, we're addicted to federal dollars for our highway system. So, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, but it's reality, and it can happen really at any given time. I just would love to know who is in charge of making these decisions on who gets pressure and who doesn't. Thank you, Holly, for holding. I appreciate the call. Let's get to Mike. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. Comment about the Haitian refugees at the border.
Yeah.
I understand, like, people from Nicaragua and down in South America walking up from down there through Mexico and everything, but how did all these Haitian refugees get from an island in the middle of the Caribbean that are they're supposedly poor to Mexico to get up here?
Well, I suspect that it's those coyotes and their resources. These are billion-dollar businesses. I mean, it's going to cost you $15,000 to get from Haiti and through Mexico, and you got a guide right. That's going to lead you. They got a boat. They'll put you on one. They'll get you over to Central America, and then you'll walk. I'll try to find that article which talked about the path that they take, because I do have, I think, a more direct responsive answer to that question. But
right.
Ultimately, that's what it is. They are facilitated.
For the price that these guys are charging, like $15,000 to $20,000 a person, they could come here legally for that less, probably that price or less.
I would imagine, and there are legal channels for immigration, right?
It'd be a whole lot easier to do it that way.
Well, and you just illustrate a great point, Mike. If our warring factions in D.C. could get their act together, they could do something by way of immigration reform that would facilitate and allow the easier. Obtaining of U.S. citizenship. Apparently, it takes years and years and years, and I don't know why. Because if you got to go through the legal process and it takes years, and they treat you well better if you just go to the border and walk across and you're allowed in and you can get a work visa, perhaps, what's the point of going through the legal process? I mean, that seems to be the conclusion that many of them have reached, and that's why we've got a crisis on our hands. Appreciate the call, my friend. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Home Helpers, home. #641, 55KRC, Talk Station. Friday Eve. Yeah, in terms of that journey, and if you look on the map, I mean, I sure as hell wouldn't want to be on a boat from Haiti over to Central America, you know, going due west beneath Cuba, you know, sort of the pathway. I don't know if they stop in Jamaica or not, but, you know, that's kind of the direction that you go to make it over to Central America. You got the Cayman Islands in the middle, and then, of course, there's Mexico. You got Belize. You got Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Central American countries. And the way it was described, it's the migrants are stranded. This is in connection with that Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, Mexican president's statement about, listen, we got urgent action. We need you to hurry up and do something about this. Basically, give us money. We got tens of thousands of migrants stranded in the southern Mexican city of Tapachula. They're waiting for documents that will allow them to go north, documents that will be issued by the Mexican government. So the folks that are already on our border are the ones that have already made this journey. It's pointed out that many have been living in Chile and Brazil, which gave them refuge after the 2010 earthquake. Apparently 200,000 people were killed in that one. So this has been a long time coming. And again, if you are taking refuge in Chile and Brazil, and your option is to go into the United States, if you have a strong president that's there and is enforcing the border security, and you know you're not going to get in because you escaped whatever harm you faced in Haiti, you are now in an interim country under United States law. Listen, you found your refuge. You're in Chile now. You're in Brazil now. You may think it will be better to be here, but we don't take everybody that's facing a horrific situation in their neighborhood. You had an earthquake, hundreds of thousands of people died, you made it to Chile, fine, you're stuck there. But if you have an administration that is saying, oh, no, come on up, then this pent-up demand to get here from people who have been since 2010, perhaps living in Chile and Brazil, for all the new ones who are willing to make the treacherous journey, there's where your numbers start coming from. And it's pointed out they cross up to a dozen countries, including Panama and Colombia, where thousands also are now stranded. So the reasons are varied. Some of the reasons will qualify you perhaps for asylum in our country. Some are not. That requires a hearing. And that's why the Biden administration is letting people go into the interior of the country with a hearing date. And yeah, they'll show up. Sure they will. And how far backed up are these hearings anyway? If you've got literally a million plus new folks illegally entering our country and waiting for a hearing, do you think there are that many administrative judges that can deal with that, plus the backlog that they've already had from all the prior years where they weren't able to handle the number of people entering our country for an asylum hearing? The problem just compounds itself. It just becomes worse and worse and worse, and therefore far more difficult to deal with. So, chaos. This is just another illustration of chaos under the Biden administration. You saw a lot of this chaos unfold in Afghanistan. You know, going back to that point I made earlier, it's, yes, did we want to get out of Afghanistan? Yep, pretty much everybody did. 20 years is enough. It's cost us trillions of dollars, American lives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was the plan that was the epic failure. The withdrawal was a catastrophe. Much in the same way this border mess is an absolute catastrophe. And the blame lies squarely in the lap of Joe Biden. You know, some people are critical of Trump on that entering that deal with the Taliban. And, of course, it was never ratified by the Senate, so it was never concrete or in stone. And the Taliban had violated some of the terms of it anyway. And Joe Biden changed the date anyway. So one may argue that, you know, Joe Biden inherited this mess. But you know who inherited Bay of Pigs? Jack Kennedy. That wasn't his plan. It was developed under the prior administration. But he pulled the trigger and went through with it. And it is on record as being one of the most colossal, absolute, epic failures of intelligence ever by the CIA and the United States government. Did Jack Kennedy create the plan? No. But he implemented it. Therefore, he owned it. 646 55 KRC, the talk station. .650 here, 55 KRC, the talk station. It's been a very happy Friday Eve to you. Yeah, again, just looking at the Mac, and they're talking about where these migrants have been gathering. You know, I mentioned the other cities in Colombia as well as elsewhere. Many of the Haitian refugees, again, came from back in 2010 when they had the big hurricane that killed so many people. One city that was mentioned, the town of Necocli, well, close enough. It's in Colombia. I just looked it up, where they got almost 20,000 migrants waiting for seats on boats. Boats that cross the Gulf of Uraba to Acandé, which is near the border with Panama. And you can look at the map and see that. It's not a real long trek. I don't know, maybe 100 miles or so. So they get to Panama. Once across, the migrants then start on foot through the Darien jungle, which this article points out, they battle snakes, steep ravines, swollen rivers, tropical downpours, and criminals linked to drug trafficking. None of that surprises me at all, given the part of the world that we're talking about here. It's jungle country. And under the agreement between Colombia and Panama, neighboring countries they are, no more than 650 migrants are allowed to make that trip daily. So I guess the border crossing is monitored. And they point out more than 50,000 people have crossed the border between Colombia and Panama so far just this year. That is one point of entry, right? That's one way. Think of all the other towns where folks have gathered. Think of all the other cities where it's been pointed out that folks have gathered. And the countries along the way from whom we're getting most of these migrants. You know, once they get to Panama City, you got to go through Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Honduras, or El Salvador, and Guatemala to make it up to Mexico, then go through the entire Mexican peninsula to make it to the border. This all on foot? You know, and talk about a humanitarian crisis. encouraging, not doing every single thing you can as an administration to prevent people from literally risking their lives. And I'm sure in many cases, and someday we'll find out how many people died trying to do just this, to get to a place where by law you're not supposed to be able to get in. Remember I mentioned those interim countries, every single one of those points that I mentioned, you know, all those different countries you can get out of and then go through a safer country, assuming you even qualify for asylum under United States law anyhow. But to suggest, and not every single moment in demonstration by deed, in other words, ICE agents and walls and however other means you can point out to people that you're not letting them in, coupled with strong words projected to the international community, it's not a good idea. You are going to die along the way, very likely or potentially, by trying to come here, and the effort will be fruitless. I think that's something the Trump administration was trying to convey. And, of course, nobody in the mainstream media would ever listen to anything Donald Trump said or give him credit for anything he did. And if he did say it or did it, it would be bad because, you know, orange man bad. He's not capable of doing anything. But it did project a message. And the numbers of illegals endeavoring to make that trip and that journey, or worse or even easier, reduced. It went down. We weren't in the middle of a quote-unquote crisis. Now, where your level of crisis kicks in mind may be a completely different thing. Maybe you thought it was a crisis the entire time Trump was in office. Maybe you're of the mindset, as many are, that the border situation has been a complete Charlie Foxtrot now for decades. But stark contrast between the Biden administration and where the Trump administration left off. And this is the kind of route that these folks go on. This is the type of thing that they're willing to do to make it to a place where they shouldn't have tried to go in the first instance. And think about that. No wonder the Haitians on the airplanes are upset. They went through all of that. You know, they made it over to Central America or Venezuela or Colombia or Panama or wherever. And then they walked all the way through Mexico only to be put on an airplane. Not that that's really happening, but you get the idea. A little frustrating, perhaps. 655, 55 KRCD Talk Station. One of the times when you say, is this trip really necessary? Congressman Warren Davidson on a whole bunch of stuff. We'll get into him. Coming up after the top of the hour news, followed by Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague, who's saying no to the Biden administration. We'll find out the details. Stick around.
Hear about it. Talk about it. If I hadn't heard the news earlier today, I mean, you were scaring me there.
55 KRZ, the talk station.
It's 7:06. 55 KRZ, the talk station. Says here on the rundown, supposed to be talking to Congressman Warren Davidson, but he has not called in yet, so never to fill in some time and talk about a topic we're supposed to get into him with anyway. We'll do it right now. Joe's opened the phone lines up as well. Someone check on Congressman Davidson, would you? We'll make sure nothing happened to him. In the meantime, Biden met with his fellow Democrats yesterday. He is scrambling to try to shore up this $3.5 trillion just nightmarish package of socialist ideological provisions. And there's a division in the party. We've got the West Virginia Mansions of the world who think that's way too big and have a cap of more like $1.5 trillion that they might be willing to swallow. The left wing of the party, the Ocasio-Cortez elements and the Bernie Sanders elements, they think it's not big enough. So they're still trying to package this and put this thing together. And I thought it kind of comical. I was looking at a Newsmax report on this. The Democratic leaders are counting on Joe Biden to galvanize a consensus between the progressives and the centrists in their party. Yeah, Joe Biden, the great orator. The House has a deadline on Monday to vote on the first part of the plan, and that is the infrastructure component. It's supposed to be the $1 trillion public works measure that has already been approved by the Senate, and they call it a bipartisan, although if you really look at it, you got to wonder whether it's how much of it's infrastructure. And without further ado, there he is, Congressman Warren Davidson. Welcome back to the program. Good to have you on today.
Hey, Brian. Always great to talk with you.
I was just, as I was waiting, just diving into the $3.5 trillion plan, Biden was meeting with the various factions within the Democratic Party yesterday, trying to shore up some kind of consensus to get this thing passed. This is the one they want to pass through reconciliation. Part of the problem they have is a wing of their party, the far left wing, wants the infrastructure package tied to passage of this $3.5 trillion socialist dream package. But they can't even get a consensus on the $3.5 trillion package in and of itself and by itself. The Senate at least passed the so-called infrastructure package with some bipartisan assistance. So how do you see this playing out? Because my understanding is Monday is the deadline to vote on the infrastructure package, but the AOCs of the world want to tie the two together somehow. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, Speaker Pelosi started that out right as they were coming out of the victory of getting the infrastructure bill through the Senate, and she basically told Joe Biden, well, you know, we're not moving this without the $3.5 trillion. And, of course, she's getting pressure from the far left to do that. I think that was the deal that she cut with the far left to settle for $3.5 trillion. I mean, you go back, they were wanting $7 to $10 trillion, Bernie Sanders is the guy that brokered the deal to settle for $3.5 trillion, which is, you know, just an insane number. And, I mean, any of this stuff, there isn't even somebody that will lend us that much money. There's no – even though this is the biggest tax bill in history, going way beyond, you know, what the tax code was before, it is the biggest tax increase in history. It still wouldn't pay for – the new spending, let alone put a dent in the massive deficits that have already been there. Thankfully, there are some Democrats who still know math.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's something to that effect. But they also fail to appreciate, I think it's been demonstrated time after time after time after time. Kennedy understood it. Reagan understood it. Clinton even understood it. That when you lower taxes, the revenue that goes into the federal government tends to increase because business flourishes under lower taxation. This is the problem the left always has when they want to increase taxes.
Yeah, and why does it flourish? Because average people have more money at home, and they put it into the, you know, it's a consumer-driven economy. People will consume with a lot of it. And look, there are the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill could have been passed in August. Now, I don't really like it. I like the part that's actually infrastructure,
right?
Which even if you're generous and count broadband as part of it, it's, you know, a little over 10%. But the true core infrastructure is about 9% of it. I mean, that's not enough to pass food labeling laws to be calling it an infrastructure bill. But they want that, like in a normal year, you know, transportation, roads and bridges and all that is $75 billion or so. That's one of the components of the $3.5 trillion, you know, Bernie budget, you know, massive spending package. They've got a group of Democrats that are very insistent on we're not voting for that unless we get a vote on the infrastructure bill first. And they blocked Pelosi in August, so that's when Nancy Pelosi cut the deal, and she said by September 27th we will vote on the infrastructure bill. But she doesn't have the votes either way in the House because of the deal she cut then.
Right. At this point, she doesn't have the votes because the left wing of her party is raising their metaphorical middle finger at the notion of passing the infrastructure bill because they're not getting their $3.5 trillion budget bill in. Right? I mean, that's where her problem lies.
That's where her problem lies. And look, she's only been blocked twice so far. Once was at the end of July. And that was over the eviction moratorium. You know, they wanted to put that on the floor, and they didn't have the votes for that. So Joe Biden really unconstitutionally re-extended it, and the court reiterated.
Yeah.
And, when we ruled in June, we actually meant that you don't have the authority to do that. So, so far, he's listened to the court the second time. But, you know, Pelosi's losing the grip on the party, and frankly, I'm glad. I hope she just leaves and, turns it over. But in terms of infrastructure, moving in a clean way, they could have done that in August. They would have had the votes for it. And I think they would because, you know, what are you going to go as AOC and say, no, you won't deliver this?
Right.
They say they're not going to do it. And they say they've got, a big number, 30 or 40, that will go against it. And they say there's a small number, and I think it is. I think it's 20 or less that is insisting on the infrastructure bill first. But either way, I mean, they only got 4 votes. So either way, it's enough to kill it. And as Republicans, we're just trying not to get in the middle of the circular firing squad.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's nice to be able to have our popcorn out, or at least on the more conservative side of the ledger, have our popcorn out and our feet up enjoying the show for a change. What about the debt ceiling? This is another one. And I know Mitch McConnell has said, hey, go it alone. And in fact, Republicans have told the Democrats, listen, you want to raise the debt ceiling? Do it with budget reconciliation. Can they do that, which would require only the 51 votes in the Senate, not 60 that would be required under normal circumstances? But I get the sense that if the Democrats wanted to raise the debt ceiling through reconciliation, that they wouldn't get everything they want by way of the debt ceiling increase. So what's this all about, Congressman Davidson?
Well, they punted earlier this week. They put a continuing resolution up. And
yeah.
They moved the debt ceiling really to a date. So technically, they didn't raise the debt ceiling to a cap. So there's not really a cap right now, which is a problem. If they were to pass a bill right now, they could spend essentially unlimited money because there's the concept of a cap isn't there. And that goes out into December. So, a lot of us believe that would be the most likely scenario. Just CRs are likely because there wasn't really progress on it. Even the $3.5 trillion, it was a shell. It was a number. It was a concept. They didn't have text for it.
Right.
Clear precisely how much was going anywhere. They just weren't doing the work. And, I say that, look, Republicans did lots of CRs as well. It's a catastrophe watching how money is spent here, and partially because they're so bad at it. That's how the deficits go big. The only way to buy off the support is to spend more and more and more money. I mean, I watched bills that were considered bad on spending made better by spending more. So there's a reason it's bipartisan, the failure and addiction on spending. But I will say it's completely unprecedented what the Democrats want to do on total spending right now.
Well, spending, the dollar amount alone is insane. I mean, for all the reasons you point out, the fact that we've already got like almost $30 trillion in debt we racked up, the idea that no one will even loan us that much, there's not enough tax dollars in the world to cover it. We could go on and on and on and on. But it's the devil in the details as well. Even if you could blackboard the figure and provide a mechanism that it truly would be paid for. And I recognize that's not possible. It's what's in it that is so frightening, this whole shift to green energy. I mean, haven't we learned anything from the frozen windmills in Texas and the problems that Europe is facing right now with the wind not blowing? They're now future full reliance on the Russians to get natural gas into their countries. I mean, The scenario that's unfolding is just god-awful for the American public if we go in that direction.
No, I started calling the whole thing budgetary fentanyl. You know, drugs are bad, but they're really bad if you put fentanyl on them. And this is essentially the math alone makes this a bad spending bill. When you look at what they actually want to do with it, it'll literally kill our country as we know it, fundamentally transforming it. I mean, direct payments to people that are making as much as $100,000 just massively grows the number of people that have grown accustomed to, oh, well, I need this. The government is the supplier of this, and never knowing that it's really just confiscated from your neighbors or stating it that way. And look, there is a broad support for the idea of a social safety net in America. We spend about $1 trillion a year. For reference, that's hundreds of billions of dollars more than we spend on defense. It is already very big, and that's net of Social Security and Medicare. This is just means-tested programs. This would massively, more than double the safety net by picking up new things like child care.
Yeah.
And paid family leave.
Pre-K education. We got to get those children in there and get them brainwashed early on, Congressman.
Yeah, we got to get them masked up earlier in a government facility. and, you know, pay for community college. So it's just a massive expansion of the social state. And that's what, look, when they said they wanted to fundamentally remake America, they meant it, of course, in lots of other ways. They're working to destroy our country, which is another path to fundamentally remaking it. And look, they know that they can't in the long run afford all this. They do. They're, now, some of them don't, but just like some listeners right now don't. They say, no, it can all work. But look, the people that are talking about this modern monetary theory, the idea that since you have a currency, you can just keep creating money, not just be constrained by taxes, not just be constrained by what people will lend you, but you can just poof, create the money because you have a currency.
Right.
It doesn't work. It's not going to end well. It's essentially a sample pack of that already, and we're doing that.
Well,
the Federal Reserve's balance sheet's over $8 trillion. So of the $29 trillion in debt, $8 trillion of it is you know, that's where your prices are going up.
Yep.
You know, you've destroyed the dollar to the tune of 8/29, you know, about 27%.
It's crazy. Congressman Davidson, hold on. We're going to take a break, and we'll get your comments, brief comments on the National Defense Authorization Act. More with Congressman. It's 7:21. It's coming up at 7:22. 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with Congressman Warren Davidson. Turning now to the National Defense Authorization Act. I'm going to get your general thoughts and comments on it. But one of the things that a provision in it, which the White House is completely against, it would limit commanders' ability to discipline those individuals who refused a COVID-19 vaccination. You wouldn't be able to dishonorably discharge them. I understand you can discharge, but it would make it an honorable discharge. I understand there's sort of a big question mark floating around that. That is, again, just one provision of the NDAA. But Congressman Davidson, your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of weak sauce because you can still be kicked out. It's like you can still be fired. But in the military, there are a lot of benefits for veterans.
Right.
When you get a less than honorable discharge, you're not actually eligible for many of those. So, you know, it's an important provision. There are some wins, and you know, I guess you can call that a win. Of sorts, it's better than letting them continue to try to kick people out with dishonorable discharges. I mean, they're talking about kicking out 10% of our Navy SEALs. I mean, you know, the amount of time, energy, talent that goes into training a Navy SEAL is enormous.
Money.
And they're talking about kicking out 10% of the Navy SEALs. I mean, this is not a bill that's good for national security. And look, by default, I start out as a basis of I automatically support the National Defense Authorization. We absolutely need to have a strong, strong military and be wise about how and where to use it. But the big thing is this comes in the midst of zero accountability for DOD or the administration. I mean, look, Joe Biden, Anthony Blinken, Secretary Austin, Chairman of Joint Chiefs Milley, nobody's accountable for the failure in Afghanistan. Nobody's accountable for willfully leaving American citizens behind or our allies. They're actively helping elements of the Taliban target our former allies in the Panjshir Valley in Afghanistan. You know, you could leave and not actively do that. I mean, there's so many layers that are wrong on Afghanistan, not to mention the drone strike that killed civilians that Milley touted as, you know, a great success. So I think, look, the right thing to do is to withhold votes for this without some kind of accountability. I mean, it continues the problem of injustice with two tiers of justice, you know, one standard for the brass and another for the rank and file. And there's just no way I can support it with no accountability.
Fair enough. And I don't think there's any question, unwavering opinion on that one from Congressman Warren Davidson. Congressman Davidson, thank you so much for the time you spent with my listeners and me today. I don't envy the job, but we certainly appreciate your being in that particular job and fighting for common sense and reason. Continue the fight. We'll look forward to having you back on the program soon, and best of health to you and your family between now and then.
Yeah, same. Thanks so much, Brian. Great talking with you.
As always, my pleasure. 7:25 coming up. .729 right now here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Happy Thursday. Call it Friday Eve, if you will. I am so pleased to welcome back to the 55 KRC Morning Show Iowa Treasurer Robert Sprague, to talk about something he and I see very eye to eye on. The idea that the that our banks out there are going to have to turn over to the IRS, I guess, any transaction where we either deposit more than $600 or withdraw more than $600. That's it. That's, Robert Sprague, welcome back. That is the only thing, the only criteria is that we withdraw or add more than $600?
That's right. That is, it is absolutely astounding, isn't it?
I am just beside myself. There is no, they have no right to do this. Under what theory can they invade our day-to-day financial transactions? There is no probable cause that any crimes are being committed. They've got nothing to go on. I mean,
absolutely right. Absolutely right. You know, this is just an obvious invasion of our individual privacy, our rights that are guaranteed by the United States Constitution. It's an overreach. I tell you, it's chilling to listen to the Secretary of the Treasury testify in Congress that they want to do this and to propose this, and it's almost tyrannical, quite frankly.
Well, they've always had it. Banks have, for a long, long time anyway, been an obligation to let the federal government or the IRS know. I think it was transactions in excess of $5,000. Withdraws, though, is my understanding. You're probably more well-versed on that than I am. Mm-hmm. And the argument was always, well, it's just so we can ferret out criminal activity. Well, again, absent probable cause, just because someone engages in a financial transaction of that magnitude doesn't even raise to me a red flag that it is criminal. And how dare they presume that we are engaged in crime simply based on a financial transaction?
Look, I think that at the end of the day, we all know where this is coming from. It's to fund this kind of grab bag of socialist policies that they don't have the money for at the federal level. And this is why they want to try to enact this on every American. And I just think it's clear overreach.
Well, now let us apply that logic. I guess that is the motive that they have set forth, that by them keeping track of that would only apply to deposits from my perspective. Because I'm a cash guy. To the extent I can pay for cash, Treasurer Sprague, that's what I do. And I do it just because I do use credit cards. I do shop online. I get it all. But you know what? If I can deprive, the powers that be, our overlords at corporate America or the federal government from any additional information to what I do on a day-to-day basis, I just do it for sport. So I'll go out and I'll withdraw maybe like every week $600 or something. This means that my banks are going to start reporting my cash withdrawal simply because I like to pay the family grocery bill in cash rather than charge it.
Exactly.
How does that facilitate this money grab that you're talking about or that they are talking about?
Absolutely. And I think that there are a lot of Americans, frankly, a lot of Americans, and I'm talking about from everywhere in the United States, that this will actually drive away from the banking system. It's incredible. People are already incredibly suspicious of what the government is doing on every single issue. They want to have complete control and complete visibility. And this is one more way for them to put their thumb on us.
Okay. So back to how our withdrawals impact the tax collection. I can hear the argument that, well, if we can't follow all the deposits, then how are we going to know how much any individual makes? And are they accurately reporting on their IRS forms their total assets or because they could be working for cash on the side and not reporting it. I can pay a contractor in cash to do a job, and if they don't report that transaction to the IRS, how do I know? But that, again, does not translate to withdrawals of cash from accounts. How do they connect that to this alleged goal of getting all of the tax revenue in the door?
Quite frankly, I don't think there is a connection.
Okay.
Which, to tell you the truth, makes me wonder if they just want this for other means. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, we've seen the IRS in other instances. I remember about 10 years ago, there were a series of stories that came out where the IRS was targeting certain organizations. And you could just see where this provides the IRS a tremendous weapon, a blunt instrument, if you will, to come down on certain organizations and have them be targeted. And I think that you know, anybody who values their liberties in the United States has to look at the government knowing about every single one of your financial transactions, and it's going to put a tremendous chilling effect across the United States. And I'm not the only one that sees this as an enormous problem. We have broad support across 21 treasurers from 21 different states in the union, banking professionals. I tell you, the banks and the credit unions, they hate this. There's no way that they are going to be able to comply. It's a tremendous burden on them. It's just one more overregulation piece for the banking industry. And there is an incredible amount of opposition to this across the United States.
Well, I was hoping I would hear that. I've always pointed out to my listeners the idea that Eric Holder's Operation Chokehold was a threat to banks on a compliance audit level if they didn't capitulate to his demands that they end doing lawful business with payday lenders, for example. Oh, you want a compliance audit, do you? And, you know, no bank or hospital system or anybody that's under that level of regulatory scrutiny wants to pay their lawyers to deal with a compliance audit, knowing full well there's no way every I is dotted and T is crossed. They're going to find something. So they have that threat. That same kind of threat then could be used with this. Oh, you didn't report all the transactions. And then ultimately, there's also that unbelievable cost associated with it. Robert Sprague, I am one guy with a couple different bank accounts, but there are 340 million people in the United States of America, and I bet at least half of us all have bank accounts. The IRS couldn't even deal with the level of info that would be flying at them on any day or on every day anyway, could they?
No. And I'll tell you what, that's what begs the question is, how are they going to use this to target people? And you can see, once they have this information, you can see a variety of ways where it could be used by people within an administration, staff people that are at the IRS and with the federal government. This could be used in a lot of ways to really hurt individual citizens. Anybody who's been through an IRS audit can tell you that it's an incredibly burdensome process. And sometimes the process is the punishment. The process is the punishment. And
yes.
And so you're opening this up to the IRS, and the IRS is going to have information about every single transaction that you do as an individual American. This is not who we are.
No, it
isn't. Not who we are. This is more of a regime, you know, like a China type of a policy, quite frankly.
Yes.
Where they want total control and total visibility into what their citizens are doing. And you know, our Constitution, our government really was founded on this idea of individual rights and individual privacy. And these individual rights are so important. And the reason that they're important is also because they lead to our economic freedoms and our economic system, which is free, which is the most productive system in the world. And so those things are intertwined and interconnected. And when you lose one, you also lose the other. And so we've got to be very careful to stand against this and make sure that the federal government you know, can't move forward with this obvious intrusion into our personal rights.
Well, does this not have to pay us the strict scrutiny test in court? This is an unreasonable search and seizure in violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. Without probable cause, they have no rights to our individual day-to-day transactions, do they? And are you going to, along with these 21 other fellow state treasurers, file a lawsuit to stop this?
We will absolutely follow through. We will stand against this. We will have to see the way that it makes its way through Washington, D.C. But I can tell you now, if your listeners are out there, it would be great if they could shoot a short note or an email to their congressman and tell them that they stand with us in opposition to this proposal by the Biden administration and by Secretary Yellen for this intrusion into our personal banking lives.
Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague, I cannot thank you enough for being on this, joining in with the sane states. It just bothers me there's only 21 of you so far. Hopefully that should be 50.
Absolutely.
This is not a Republican-Democrat issue. This is an issue of personal liberty, freedom, and privacy. We are guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States of America and the Ohio Constitution, for that matter. Keep up the great work. Again, contact your elected officials, and we see if we can't put our foot down on this one. Robert Sprague, until we talk again, best of health to you and your family.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. 7:39 right now, 55 KRC. It is 7:44 right now at 55 KRC Talk Station, and a very happy Friday Eve to you. Let's go over to the phone, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program. Happy Friday Eve to you.
Happy Friday to you as well, and happy belated birthday for you.
Oh, thank you, man.
My thought is, with this banking bill, is that if you want to take money out of your bank account and go buy a gun or silver or ammo or survival food or whatever, they'll have it. They'll be able to track you instantly and monitor what you're buying.
Well, that's the way it is. That's the way with credit cards right now.
Right.
At minimum, the credit card. Yeah, at minimum, the credit card company knows, and we all know that government can, you know, issue demands for records or subpoenas to a credit card company and get all that information from them. But this would require the bank to real time let them know when you're just pulling out plain old cash. That's
to do the things we just discussed. That's
right.
That's the problem. That's why they don't want. That's why they want to know, because you'll probably get a notification. What is this money? Where did this money go?
Yeah, and I would get away with. I've got two words for you, and they ain't happy birthday.
Exactly.
You have no right to know what I'm spending my money on, absent some probable cause that would allow you to get a court order to come and rifle through my effects and papers. But you're going to have to meet a pretty substantial threshold to get that done. In the meantime, I don't care if you want to know what I spent $647 on yesterday. You can, I'm going to enter into FCC non-compliant territory, but you get what I'm saying, Mike. No. The answer is no. We put our foot down on this type of intrusion. It is unconstitutional. Thanks, man. Take care. Stay well. 746. Max, if you want to hang on for a second, I can't wait to hear your comment. And yours are also welcome, people. 749-5500, 800-822. It's 7:50, 55 KRC Talk Station. I'm going to get to Max's call. Your calls are welcome, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Just a quick reminder that after the top of the hour news, Brad Rica, author of a book. This should be an interesting conversation. True Raiders, the untold story of the 1909 expedition to find the legendary Ark of the Covenant. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark in, well, real time, except I've never heard they found it, so I'm guessing we know the outcome of the book. But in any way, that'll be after the top of the hour news. In the meantime, Max, thanks for holding and welcome to the program.
Hi. Morning, Brian Thomas.
Good morning.
I work at a financial institution, so I'll be quick about this. Right now, there's currently two major forms of reports that we give to the government. The first one is what we call a CTR. And that's called a currency transaction report. Now, this is mandatory. If we ever receive $10,000 and a penny in cash, now this is cash only,
okay,
or you take out $10,000 and a penny
right.
in cash in a 24-hour period, you will be approached by the teller or an office manager and say, hi, I need to fill out a CTR form.
Right. That was the threshold that I couldn't remember when I was talking to Sprague. I thought it was $5,000, Max. I appreciate you clearing mm-hmm. that up for me. So it's $10,000 and a penny or over.
$10,000 and a penny. If it's under $10,000, we don't need that form. Doesn't,
right.
You don't get reported for it. Now, that one they'll approach you for because we have to get your name, license, Social Security, reason for getting the money out, occupation, that sort of thing. It's the deal. We don't like to do it. You don't like to do it. You know.
Same thing apply. Does the same thing apply when you write a check, Max?
No. This is purely cash transaction.
Okay.
This is,
all right.
So you could come in with like $5,000 in cash and $6,000 in checks. No reports filed. You're fine.
Okay. All right.
The other one that you will never know about because for obvious reasons we do it in secret is called a suspicious activity report, or a SAR. Now, if we deem anything that seems sketchy, like as soon as we say, oh, you have to
we have to file a report because you're dropping off $12,000. And you go, oh, okay, well, I just want to drop off $6,000 today.
Or $9,999.99.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, well, why are they avoiding this? Okay, start writing things down.
Gotcha.
So those are the two major ones that we have to do currently. And yeah, we're completely against the idea of having to report every $600 that you take in and take out. Because I would get reported every week for taking out paycheck.
See, there you go, Max. I mean, as I pointed out, I'm a cash transaction kind of guy when I can. And I will quite often withdraw more than that amount at one time. I mean, that just happens. I mean, I see my expenses through the week. I know what my grocery bill is going to be. I know what kind of things I buy throughout the week. I know if there's going to be additional expenses I might have this week. And I will draw out amount accordingly. But there's nothing criminal about what I'm doing, nor does it rise to a level of criminal suspicion that would require, you know, they could even open some sort of investigation into. Right now, what you're telling me, Max, is as a teller or a bank professional, that you are obligated to be the eyes and ears for the federal government and give them information on transactions that may have absolutely nothing to do with anything illegal or untoward whatsoever. You're an agent of the government. You know, you're kind of like mask mandate people. You know, the clerk at the convenience store is the one that has to enforce the mask mandate on behalf of, you know, Governor DeWine or something. I know it's regulations. I know it's all regulatory. But honestly, it's just, you know, you just kind of put an exclamation point on the whole reality, Max, that they're just interested in rifling through our effects and papers every imaginable way. And for reasons that you and I both know can be very nefarious. And ultimately, the weight of the finances or the of the obligation to comply with all this lands on our lap. We have to pay for the extra expense ultimately. Thanks, Max. Appreciate you clarifying all that for me and listening. 7:55. Let's find out about the original 1909 expedition to find the Ark of the Covenant. Author Brad Rica coming up after the top of the hour news, followed by Northern Kentucky Right to Life's 48th annual celebration. We're going to hear the information from Fred Summey. He's coming up at 8:50. I'll be back after the news.
We have a First Amendment right.
Exercising our First Amendment right every day.
It's not a right to violence. It's never been.
55 KRC, the talk station.
8:05 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. A very happy Friday Eve to you. Brian Thomas here. I was looking forward to this all morning. I saw it on the rundown. I'm happy to welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show author Brad Rica. You may have read his work, Edgar Award-nominated Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, All of the Lionhearted, American Mastodon, and the award-winning Superboys. He's here to talk about his latest book, True Raiders, the Untold Story of 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. Brad, welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show. It's a pleasure having you on today.
Hey, Brian. Pleasure's mine. Good morning.
Good morning. And I was laughing, and I'm not – this kind of – the awesome tale that unfolds here in your book, it reminded me of Monty Python and the Holy Grail when God says, find the Grail, sending you on a quest. Where do you start? I mean, it's like the world's a big place. You're looking for something that has been around for thousands of years. Where do you first start? You just don't start wandering around and looking in castles. Brad, tell us the story.
I mean, yeah, that's not far off with the Monty Python. This is going to sound like a coast-to-coast AM thing, you know, which isn't bad at all. But it's a real story. It's in 1909. There was this group of British ex-soldiers and businessmen who found some guy who said he knew where the Ark was. And their leader was this guy named Monty Parker. And he was, you know, he heard this story and he just saw a lot of dollar signs. And they thought if they could bring the Ark back, they'd be rich. So they headed off to Jerusalem and they just started to dig. And they really liked Monty Python. They didn't know what they were doing. So there's all these kind of funny stories and they're trying to dig and telling people they're building a hospital, which they weren't. and looking for something that they don't even know if it's there. But that's where they started.
Well, I guess I'm inclined to ask you straightforward. I mean, didn't they have con artists and shysters back in 1909? Because, you know, if someone came up to me and said, hey, I got a map that shows you where the Ark of the Covenant is buried, I think I'm going to be a little bit skeptical on that kind of claim. Brad?
Totally. And I think that's why I kind of wanted to write about it, because I couldn't understand why they would go, and they raised a lot of money to do it. But I think this guy who said he knew where it was really persuasive. He had a code that he found in the Bible.
Oh,
he was this big scholar, and he showed them how it worked. And all of a sudden, they started getting sentences out of the Old Testament that said things like, go 40 yards east and turn left and dig here. And it seems like it was really persuasive. Plus, it's the Ark. I mean, whether you believe that it existed or not, it's just one of those things that has always kind of captured people's imagination, right?
And, well, fair enough. I mean, it's like the cup of Christ. You know, if it's out there, if you believed it, then obviously something that might be worth looking for. I guess the field of archaeology has developed a lot since the 1900s, early 1900s, too, Brad. They weren't as mindful about the delicacy and have a full appreciation for ancient artifacts like they do these days. But let me ask you this: how did you find out about this story from 1909? I'm kind of curious about that, too.
Yeah, so I kind of stumbled onto it. So Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite movie from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I saw it in the theater with my dad and my brother, and for some reason, you know, that was the one that always stuck with me. It's the, you know, it's Indy, it's the Nazis, it's the Ark, it's just everything about it was just so great. And I always knew I wanted to write about it. And then I read just years later, or a few years ago, I mean, that the story of Raiders might have been inspired by a real-life adventure. And, you know, like the movie, I felt like my face was melting off. I couldn't believe it. So I just kept picking away at it. And sure enough, there was this crazy story underneath it that has a lot of the same elements that the movie has, too.
Fair enough. And it also involves, who was described as, I suppose, by Monty Parker, your subject, the guy that led the expedition, the most beautiful woman in the world. I have pictures of her. I just pulled her up. Ava Astor, off the internet. Hey, beauty's subjective, but apparently she had an influence over and was involved in this on some level. How did that come about?
Yeah, so again, it goes back to your Monty Python comment,
right,
where God says, you know, find it. It's a little different here. There's this Ava, who's this rich socialite, just divorced from the Astor family, has just an ungodly amount of wealth, and she's completely gorgeous. Everyone's following her around. She has tons of suitors. She's really smart. And she, her and Monty kind of start conversations and start, you know, being seen all over together. And he's kind of, he doesn't have a ton of money. He's the second son of an earl. And she kind of dumps him. And he tells her, well, I'm going to, you know, maybe go look for this Ark of the Covenant. And she stops for a second. She says, if you bring that back, then I'll talk to you again.
Ah.
So not only is he motivated by money, but it just becomes, you know, something else on the long list of kind of dumb, kind of crazy things that people do for love.
That's hilarious. Well, and I also understand the book, and again, my guest today, Brad Rica, the book True Raiders, The Untold Story of the 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. There were psychics involved in this, too. I guess psychics were a thing in that era, and people actually believed in them. Wasn't it Houdini? He used to debunk psychics or something, but how did a psychic get involved in this?
Yeah, there's everything in the kitchen sink. There's psychics that they hire to bring with them to help them find it, and they can't, they're not really very helpful. There's also a connection to the Titanic, to King Tut's tomb. There's even a chapter about Jack the Ripper. And I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, it's all connected to the story, but it's kind of like those old in the 80s, you know, they had all these stories like this, like In Search Of and Amazing Stories.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Trying to, like, get back at. Yeah.
I remember In Search Of. Wasn't that was Leonard Nimoy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Spock. He would come on.
You and I,
they were looking for Bigfoot.
Brad, I just had a birthday day before yesterday. I just turned 56. It sounds to me like you and I are close
Happy
in
birthday.
Age. Yeah, it sounds like you and I are close in age. If you remember, In Search Of as well. You point out that you used uncovered records from the original expedition. Where did you locate those? And was there much detail in them? Like, did they draw maps or did they have a game plan laid out? What was the source information, Brad?
There's everything. And that's why what helped also draw me to the story is it's so kind of bananas about, you know, going after the Ark and psychics and all this stuff. But it really happened. And I found these records that have everything from expense reports to maps to notes to even bribes they paid out, just all this kind of stuff. I mean, they were very serious about it, and they thought they were going to find it.
Well, I don't want to – if it's a spoiler alert, then you say that's a spoiler alert, buy the book, which they can. My listeners will buy this book. It'll be on my blog page later this morning, 55krc.com, where I always put authors' books there so people can get a copy. But
appreciate that.
I said up front, you know, didn't work their shysters and con artists there. Was this all about, like, getting money from investors? I mean, or was the impetus behind it truly a heartfelt, believed-in thing that, yeah, we think we figured this out where it is?
Well, I think it's easy to make fun of it a little bit. You know, it happened 100 years ago, and I do, you know, it a lot. But I think something changes on this expedition where it does change from something that's purely money-driven to something that's more spiritual. And all I'll say about the end is the ending of the book is, you know, right out of Raiders, the movie. There's a spot, one of the most sacred spots in Jerusalem where they think it is, and they're not allowed to dig. So Monty and his crew disguises themselves, and they go and dig. And what they find, there's a lot of different speculation, but then a week later, every newspaper around the country and around the world has headlines that says, "Have Englishmen found the Ark?" So
Wow. The
ending of this is really mysterious, which really kind of put chills down my spine. So, I won't give it away, but
it's
in a very different place.
You did a great job of piquing people's curiosity on that one, Brad. I think that netted you a few more sales. Brad Rica, it's great conversation and a fascinating book. Again, True Raiders, The Untold Story of the 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. My guest today, Brad Rica, author of multiple books. Brad, we're looking forward to more things you write down the road, and people will be going over to my blog page, 55krc.com, to get their own copy and enjoy it. Share it with a friend, too, folks. Brad, until we talk again, best of health to you.
Thanks again. Same to you, and happy birthday again.
Oh, thanks, man. Coming up at 8:16, 55 KRC, the talk station. We're going to be talking later with thank you, Joe. 821, 55 KRC, the talk station. Fans of Monty Python know exactly what that is, Joe. So I have to qualify that for those who aren't familiar with that bumper music. It's not normally in the loop, in the set list, as it were. Yeah. The scene transition music from Monty Python. What are you doing? You're diverting my eyes. Oh, stop it. Right, Lord. Find the Grail. And the Castle Anthrax's beacon does happen to be Grail-shaped. Oh, anyway. What more can one say? 749-5500-800-823 talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. That is funny. What isn't funny, and I could probably tie these two together because I think they are in, they are linked on some level, because you know, we live in a representative democracy. You elect someone who ultimately wants to be reelected. They're supposed to serve the will and the desires of the constituents to the best possible. You're never going to make all the people happy, but you got to, you know, get a feel for what your people want. And like, you know, a Joe Manchin kind of guy, he's like from West Virginia. It's bright red. He's a Democrat. Strange that he would even be in office. He recognizes that if he doesn't put his foot down, there's going to be pitchforks and torches on his front porch. So you got him standing in the way of the $3.5 trillion bill. I think the general mood of the country, insofar as policing is concerned, is going the way of the police department in a positive way. In other words, we're tired of police being attacked. We're tired of the disparate treatment of lawbreakers when it comes to, oh, I don't know, burning down a federal courthouse when compared to just walking through the Capitol on January 6th. You draw your own conclusions as to which is worse. They're both criminal. Some get locked up pending trial. Others are never prosecuted in spite of the fact that law enforcement knows who they are, and you know what I'm talking about. But what has happened is the murder situation has gotten out of control in this country. Now, it's still not as bad as it was in the 90s, and I always joke about that because we lived in Chicago during the 90s, and I make fun of the murder numbers, not because I'm making fun of tragedy or heartache, just because people talk about how bad things are. I'm just like, man, you should have lived there when I lived there. These are piker numbers compared to then. But in any event, murders rose by almost 30% in 2020 nationwide. 30%. And they draw the maybe one of the reasons is policing's been pared back since the protests from George Floyd across this great land of ours. Biggest spike in murder since the national record keeping started in 1960. And in 2020, I just mentioned 30% jump nationwide. The murder numbers continue to jump in 2021, just at a slower rate. Murders per 100,000, 29% rise in 2020 was the biggest since FBI started recording, is again in 1960. It also says previous 1 year increase in murders nationwide was 12.7. That was 1968. So we blew that one out of the water. Vast majority of murders committed by a firearm, up from 67% to 77%. Biggest share ever. Biggest state with the highest number of murders for the 32nd straight year, Louisiana. That shocks me. That's strange. Murders rose over 35%. Remember, the baseline here nationwide is 30. 35% increase in cities with populations north of 250,000 folks. Over 40% in cities between 100 and 250,000. And you got a 25% increase in cities under 250,000. Now, if you live in a blue city or state, they say murder rate was up at least 20% in every region of the country carried by President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Now, the reason I dovetail this into policing and our attitude toward police, the effort by Congress to, well, control federally on a federal level, local policing, it just tanked the other day. They couldn't find agreement. Senator Cory Booker, who really was pushing for this so-called reform, he said the deal remains out of reach right now. And in spite of working with law enforcement groups, et cetera, the big problem is they wanted to take away the qualified immunity from police officers. And, of course, I think every union in the country that represents police officers were like, hell no, you are never going to get anybody to join the police force if you take away qualified immunity. I mean, wake up. So at least for the time being, stick a stake through the heart of that one. It's no longer an item. It may pop back up, though. And I'm sure that going back to representative democracy, that a lot of people were getting in touch with their elected officials and say, hey, lay off the police. We need them. Our police force is getting smaller by the minute. People are taking early retirement. People are quitting the profession because of your attitude toward law enforcement. Lighten up. Jim, hang on. We'll get you first out of the gate. Got to stop and put a good word in for EcoShield. What an amazing product.
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about.
831, 55 Care City Talk Station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones, and over on the blog page, 55KRC.com, you can get a copy of the book, True Raiders, Untold Story of 1909 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. You can hear my conversation with Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague, who is as incensed as I am about the pending regulation that is going to require a bank to notify the IRS anytime you deposit or withdraw $600 or more. What an offense to the Constitution and our rights to privacy. And talk to Congressman Warren Davidson, and I got Jim on the phone with a comment about that. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling this morning, and a happy Friday Eve to you.
Likewise, Brian. That $3.5 trillion bill is just it's green new energy crap that they're trying to shove down our throats. And iHeartRadio is playing right along with it. They got kind of like a PSA right now going about clean energy and crap, and then it's going to help the poor when it actually that's Jim, going to hurt anybody, especially the poor. It's going to drive up prices on everything.
Do you have advertising dollars to spend? Then you can buy an anti-green policy ad on iHeartMedia. The way the show survives is people buy ad time. We don't discriminate over who gets to buy ads, and I have no control over that except for the people that I endorse. See, I've had people that want me to endorse them or their products, goods, or services, and I've said no. And I've said no a lot of times over my now 15th year in radio because I do not believe in that person's credibility or the service that they're peddling. That's me. So if you hear me saying something, then I believe in it and am happy to sacrifice or use my credibility and hopefully the trust that I have gained in my listening audience to recommend a product. But that doesn't mean that I recommend or agree with anything else that is said when the microphone's not on in front of me. You know what I mean? So iHeartMedia, I don't know that is going along with it. Just because someone buys time, that does not mean that the company has adopted their policy. I'll interview Democrats on my program. I don't agree with them politically, but I want to find out what's going on in their mind and which direction they want to take us. Is that me endorsing them? No. So you get the point. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So don't, and it's like the top of the hour news. People complain all the time to Joe. I tell you what, he said more phone calls about the news content at the top of the hour being left-leaning or having some certain spin or bias to it. Hey, iHeartMedia didn't write that. I didn't write it. We get a news service. They buy that. My understanding is they went with the cheapest vendor. You get what you pay for. My recommendation, just don't pay attention to it. Or find alternative sources that balance against whatever you hear that you find offensive, and then you can draw your own conclusions about whether or not you want to believe one side or the other, which is something I recommend people do pretty much with everything. Good to hear you, Jim. It's always great being able to explain that because, I mean, again, that might save Joe another 5, 10, 15 phone calls complaining about the news. Take care of yourself. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. You can get a local story in here real quick. Two people found dead in North Fairmont yesterday afternoon, discovered in a brown van at 1600 block of Pulte Street. Not a whole lot of information about it. The homicide department responded to the scene. If you have any information, though, I'm recommending Crime Stoppers at 352-3040. For those expecting some court activity and waiting for court activity, the one suit that was filed against St. Elizabeth Healthcare over the COVID-19 vaccine, according to the Enquirer, Kevin Grasher reporting, a federal judge should be ruling by the end of the week on whether St. E's is going to be stopped from requiring its employees to get vaccinated. U.S. District Judge David Bunning heard arguments from both sides yesterday, but he did say he'd issued a ruling by the end of the week, seeking an injunction against the hospital on the vaccine mandate. Got more than 10,000 employees that are required to be vaccinated by October 1st or obtain a medical and religious exemption. And the attorneys for the plaintiffs said, listen, this is a joke, this whole religious exemption. They're just denying them carte blanche. Saying these attorneys said, well, no. More than 450 exemptions for religious and medical reasons have been approved. Hundreds more have been deferred or are still pending, and over 70 have been denied. How they reach a conclusion on that? Beyond me, we know that the judge, U.S. District Judge David Bunning, should let us know what his conclusion is by Friday. 836 right now at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Coming up at the last. Idiom, I believe, is the word he was looking for, right, Joe? He's like seven times, right?
Hey.
Hey. 841, 55 Care City Talk Station. Of course, little snippets from Monty Python, Holy Grail. Thanks to the, the fuel for the fire, Brad Rica, author of book True Raiders, The Untold Story of the 1999 Expedition to Find the Legendary Ark of the Covenant. It was my first question to Brad. It was like, this reminded me of Monty Python, God popping out and saying, find the grail. It's like, okay, where does one start? Where in the world do you start? Anyhow, get a copy of the book. It sounds like it's fascinating. And I was pleased to talk with Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague today. He is putting his foot down, and this is an important subject. I recommend listening to the discussion because he seems to be almost as incensed about this as I am. And this is the unbelievably insane intrusion into our personal liberties and freedoms. A violation of the Fourth Amendment, I would call it, clearly. The right to be free of unreasonable searches and seizures. And, of course, when you're dealing with the federal banking system, you probably give up some measure of autonomy and some measure of your Fourth Amendment rights because they're entitled to find out under current law. And I appreciate Max for calling earlier. The currency transaction report, if you withdraw or deposit $10,001 or more, then they have to fill out this report. You've got to tell them what the money's for, where it came from, all this. That's a CTR. Then there's the suspicious activity report. Presently. So if you come in and you got, let's say, $10,500 and they tell you you're going to have to fill out a form and you say, okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just deposit $8,000 and then I'll come back some other day and deposit the rest. Under normal circumstances, if they didn't find the $8,000 suspicious, then you could do that and avoid the currency transaction report. But if they think you're suspicious, then they will fill out a suspicious activity report. Hey, this guy came in. He was going to deposit north of 10. He found out he had to fill a form out. And where they go with that and what they do with it is beyond me. But that's the current law. This new law, Treasurer Robert Sprague, he is fighting it along with 21 fellow state treasurers, requires financial institutions to turn over your personal bank account information to the IRS if a transaction exceeds $600. Now, that's whether you're withdrawing it or depositing it. So I'm willing to bet a lot of my listeners, every couple of weeks, every payday, there's going to have to be a transaction forwarded to the IRS explaining to the IRS what that deposit was. It was my automatic deposit for my paycheck. But I find far more offensive the idea that they are going to report your withdrawals. They know how much money you've deposited. They know what your financial, how much money you make each year. It's on your W-2 forms, assuming you're reporting everything. But withdrawing money that's already in the bank account, that $600 or more, you're getting into regular, run-of-the-mill, day-to-day type withdrawals and transactions, and every single one would have to be reported to the IRS. IRS is incapable of dealing with its own obligations now. Wasn't it Joe Biden who was trying to get $80 billion to hire additional IRS agents to do more audits for more companies and more people because they don't think that they're doing a good enough job now, that a lot of people aren't paying their taxes presently? Yeah, the argument for this $600 crap is because people aren't paying their taxes. But if you've got, let's say, 150 million bank accounts in the United States, I'm just taking, you know, one bank account for half of each member of the population. And a lot of those bank accounts are busy, you know, because they belong to pass-through entities and corporations and businesses. Can you imagine the volume of transactions that are flowing into the IRS on a daily or even a minute-to-minute basis if this thing went through? How could they even hope to deal with the information? They couldn't. It's like those conversations I have regularly with Judge Anna Napolitano or Thomas Massie about the NSA's data collection. They collect everything. Literally billions and billions of electronic transmissions every single day. I mean, I know they have electronic algorithms and, you know, smart software and crap like that to sift through it and find out the somebody has used the word terrorism in a sentence, and so they'll sift down and they'll look at the content of that one or whatever they do, but they aren't good at preventing crime with this. What they're doing is collecting evidence for future prosecutions or alternatively gathering evidence to pick on you down the road for maybe reasons political. We've already seen that with the IRS. Remember Lois Lerner's IRS. Also remember Eric Holder's Operation Chokehold. Keep that in mind when you start considering the value of this process, the idea of reporting basically all of your transactions to the IRS.